This episode, Marvel Star Wars, issue number 51, cover dated September 1981. Hello, and welcome to Marvel Star Wars, From Empire to Jedi. We are a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. My name's the Irredeemable Shag, and I'm your host, but I am not flying solo, folks. Every episode, we feature a different guest host. And for this episode, my co-host is an old buddy, and someone who's been podcasting for a decade now. In fact, he reached out to me way back in 2016 for advice on how to launch a podcast. And we had this great dialogue, and he very intelligently put together this really phenomenal show, which was then quickly stolen right out from under him by those pesky Aldrich boys. Folks, please help me welcome Mr. Pat Sampson. Welcome to the Rebel Base, Pat. Thanks for being here, man. How you doing?
Hey, Shag. I'm doing good. Thanks for letting me be here. You know, like you said, I reached out to you 2016 to get on this show. I'm finally here.
Yes.
It took a while,
yeah.
But you know what? Good things come to those who wait. So it's great to be here. And thank you again for talking with me when I was starting out. I mean, that was over 10 years ago now. Things have really come a long way in my podcasting career, along with everything else. So I appreciate it. All the helpful hints and tips and just, that guidance you gave, along with everybody else that did too.
I was happy to give you a collection of tips that you could just throw in the trash and completely ignore. So,
well, you know, you take the good, you take the bad, you take the rest, and
there you have there the you facts have. Of life. Exactly. Right.
Exactly.
Well, I'm excited to have you here, and I'm sorry I've kept you waiting for 10 years to be on this podcast, figured what I was hoping was I would have you on the show after you launched your Impact podcast.
Ah, yes. Yeah. I was hoping too that it would be a big impact, but we're still talking about that. There's got to be a few things that I got to get done. Podcasting wise, we have a lot of backlog of old stuff in the hopper yet that's recorded. So as Jarrett tells me, I have to get all that done before I can start a new show. So,
and folks, he's been talking about doing this Impact show for a decade. And by the way, you should tell the people at home, you'll get a chance later, but what's this podcast network that we're talking about?
Oh, well, for those of you who don't know, it's the Long Box Crusade podcast network. We have a wide variety of different shows, a lot of pop culture, 80s, movies, TVs, all kinds of stuff. If you got an 80s thing that you love or a pop culture, we're probably going to be talking about it. We do a lot of comic books as well, too. So go and check out the Long Box Crusade. You'll probably always notice that when we do our Christmas episodes, Jared's always coming over to Shag's and the Fire and Water place to do their lights, never doing it for ours. But, you know, it's a fun rivalry we have between each other, I guess.
Well, speaking of Jared, he was on a previous episode of this show of Empire to Jedi, and he helped cover Star Wars number 45. Uh-huh. And I'm just saying, he set a really strong example, Pat, in the area of preparation. And I really hope you can hold up to the standard he set. And by his preparation, I mean he did none. Yeah. He walked into the show blind.
Typical.
I guess he read the comic. I guess that's something. Yeah. But other than that, the man did nothing to get ready for the show. And he's like, literally, like, I don't even know what I'm doing. So that was super fun. Really appreciated that. So let's see if you can stand up to that.
Well, it's been 10 years, Shag. I've been waiting since 2016. So I think I've got some preparation done for this show. So maybe just a little leg up, but you never know.
Actually, I've kind of been waiting since 1981 to talk about this comic.
Oh, really?
Well, it's sort of kind of. I mean, obviously, I didn't know about podcasting back then, but we are finally here. This is the first issue written by David Michelinie, right? Oh. We've got Walt Simonson and Tom Palmer. They've been in place off and on a little bit here and there, but now we've got Simonson and Palmer and Michelinie together. This is the beginning of the legendary run of Star Wars. For me, this is what Star Wars comics are. I mean, issue 50 is like my favorite single issue, but this run is why I started the podcast. Oh, so excited about it.
That's good to hear. So this is like the peanut butter and the jelly all together for this?
And the peanut butter cup. It's all and of it. It's cup. The whole peanut butter and, and that peanut butter banana. It's the whole shebang. So I got out my issue. I've got it right here. This is the same issue that I had when I was, 1981. So it is 9 years old, whatever that is. And issue 50 was my first one as a collector. So this is the next month, right? So this is the next one I bought. And I clearly read this comic a lot because the cover is not even connected anymore to this book. It is ragged, it is dog-eared, and it is very well-loved. And I love a well-loved comic. So it makes me very happy to pull this out and spend some time with it.
Where did you get it from? Off a spinner rack somewhere?
Yep. Or? It was, well, they didn't actually have spinner racks at my convenience store. It was a magazine rack. So they're okay, all just flat-facing. Yep. But I mean, they're all bent to hell, though, because I mean, all the kids are bending. Looking back, I don't want Marvel fanfare, you know, or whatever they're digging through. And so it was pretty beat up probably when I got it to start with. But yeah, it was magazine rack. What about you? Did you have this growing up, or did you get it later in life?
I did not have this issue growing up, but later on, get it in the trade.
Gotcha.
In the Star Wars ones that Dark Horse put out.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I was picking Star Wars up comics here and there when I could off of the spinner rack in the convenience store that we had just down the road from me.
And I didn't mean to sneak ahead. I know we're going to be asking you about your history there. I'm glad you mentioned the Dark Horse reprints, because that's what I bought also. The ones from the 1990s, they were called the Star Wars A Long Time Ago collections. And volume 3 was called Resurrection of Evil, which is what this issue is entitled. So they named it this after this title because it's so strong. Although, unfortunately, they used the cover image. It was that Carmen Infantino cover with Vader and Leia from the banking issue. But otherwise, very exciting stuff.
Yeah. I'm glad I'm be here on the ground floor with you with this comic to start.
I'm excited. David Michelinie, his run with Simonson and Palmer is just unbeatable. It's so good. Now, folks, as we get into this, for those of you at home, I'm sure if you're listening to this, you're probably already a fan. So understand that we are just passionate fans ourselves. We are not experts. So go gentle on us when we get things wrong, because I promise you we will. It'd probably be me, probably not Pat, but I'll probably get stuff wrong. So don't be too brutal, please. Now, before we get too much further, we do need to take a second to thank our sponsors. Folks, this episode of Empire to Jedi is sponsored in part by InStockTrades.com. InStockTrades is your best online source for trades, hardcovers, and other collected editions, all for up to 42% off with free shipping on orders of $50 or more. Now, each episode will select a collected edition to briefly discuss from the InStockTrades library, and usually it's tied into the Star Wars in some way, shape, or form. I picked Star Wars Modern Era. Okay, the title's way too long, but it's called Star Wars Modern Era Epic Collection, The Screaming Citadel trade paperback. So really, it's called The Screaming Citadel. That's what you're looking for here. And this collects the series from 2015. So it's issues 31 through 43, a couple issues of Dr. Aphra. It's got an annual in there. But there's this Screaming Citadel storyline, which was really good. In fact, you know, I'll just read you the description here. So Luke reluctantly joins forces with Dr. Aphra. But will Luke find what he's looking for in the heart of the infamous Screaming Citadel? Can he trust Aphra? Or will they both wind up victims of the Citadel's queen? Plus, Luke finally gets alone time he's been after with Princess Leia. Unfortunately, comes while they're stranded on a desert island. Meanwhile, Han and Chewie go smuggling for a hut, but the Empire has held C-3PO captive for far too long, and now his faithful friend R2-D2 is riding to the rescue. So there you go. There's a lot of things going on in this trade. There's a lot of great stories in here. The writer's Jason Aaron, for the most part, because he wrote the Star Wars series. He got a couple of issues of Dr. Aphra by the amazing Kieran Gillen, art by Salvador La Roca and Andrea Sorrentino, cover arts by Marco Cicchetto. I'm sure I said that wrong, but here's the thing. It's 424 pages. So this is thick. It's almost 500 pages, 424 pages, and it normally goes for $50, but in stock trades, it's 35% off right now, so it's only $32.49. So $32.49, you can get 424 pages of, quite frankly, really good modern, or quote modern, they're 10 years old now, but modern Star Wars comics that are really a lot of fun. So highly recommend that. It's worth your time, folks. Now, Pat, did you happen to bring a recommendation?
Well, yes, Shag, I did. You know, it's been 10 years in the making since 2016. So I've been sitting on this one for quite a long time. no, but I was prepared. So as we talk about being prepared, so check another one that I'm prepared on. Star Wars Legends of the Newspaper Strips Omnibus, and it's a hardcover. This collects a lot of the work from, you got Ross Manning as a writer, as an artist, L. Williamson as a cover artist. It's about 1,096 pages big. So this is a big, hefty one. But what it covers, it's from the beginning of the 1979 newspaper that was done. This collects, got a lot of dose of the galaxy far, far away in their newspaper forms. And now it's all collected together in this one big book. A little bit on it is the Rebel Heroes adventures are chronicled by C-3PO. Luke takes his chances on a gambler's world. A sojourn on Tatooine is anything but peaceful. Princess Leia is put to work as an imperial servant. Han Solo makes another Kessel run, and some Boba Fett in there as well, too. So lots of good stuff in this one. I believe this is also done when Dark Horse They were producing these in single floppies at the time, or single issues at the time as well, too. So I was grabbing those off the shelves when I could. But, you know, as we get a little bit older, it's nice to be able to just hold down something in one big collection. And why not do it? Again, this is about 1,096 pages. It's a hardcover format. It was $125, but on in-stock trades, it's $81.25. So that's a decent savings amount for this amount of book that you get a lot to go through.
That's fantastic. I loved those Dark Horse collections. I bought the single issues. I then turned around and bought the collected editions.
Okay.
I own them in multiple formats. I enjoyed these newspaper strips so much. And interestingly enough, we're going to come back around in this episode to discuss the newspaper strips a little bit, because there's a little thing I found out late last night, which really surprised me. But that is a great pick. Those are really cool. And folks, if you didn't read the Star Wars newspaper strips, because a lot of us, like, I didn't have it in my local newspaper.
No, I didn't either.
Yeah, I had to go to my grandmother's house in this little tiny town in Michigan to read it. And she, for whatever reason, she had the Star Wars strip, and I just thought it was the coolest thing. So this is a great opportunity to read. It's a great pick. Nicely done, Pat.
Yeah, thank you.
So folks, for this and all your other trade paperback needs, please visit instocktrades.com. Now, this episode is also sponsored in part with your Patreon support, because, you know, running the Firewater Podcast Network, so many shows, requires a lot of online hosting and other services. And a while back, we realized we needed some help with the expenses. So we launched a Patreon, and you folks really stepped up to help keep the network going. So if you're enjoying shows like Marvel Star Wars From Empire to Jedi, the best way to support the show is by visiting our Patreon, which is patreon.com/FW podcast. And while you're there, please consider supporting the network. And at certain tiers, you get mentioned on your favorite shows. This episode, special thanks go out to Corellian Engineering Corporation Pirate, Al the Clone Comics Guy, David Gutierrez the Hutt, Gord Thrawn Tolton, and Mike Atchison Akbar. Again, please visit our Patreon at patreon.com/FW podcast.
It's a trap.
It is a trap. Mike Atchison, hey, you know what? With that guy. Now, folks, I want you to get out on social media, or as I like to think of it, as the HoloNet. Look for us as Empire to Jedi on Facebook, Blue Sky, Instagram, Twitter, or X, and Threads. And most importantly, leave your comments on our website, because that's where I'll pull your feedback to read on the air. So that's fireandwaterpodcast.com/Empire to Jedi. And stay tuned after Pat and I get done talking about this issue, because I will read your feedback from the previous episode. And remember, it's always about building a community of online Star Wars fans around the show. Now, Pat, we sort of, you know, so started touching on this earlier, but I need to know, what is your personal origin story with the Star Wars comics? Like, how did you fall in love with them? How'd you find them?
Well, Shad, I'm glad you asked. Of course, the movies, as I was a kid, hit me right at the right time. Growing up, right at the right time.
Wait, they made movies based on these comics?
I think so. Yeah.
Wow.
You know, the adaptations of it all were pretty cool.
News to me.
Yeah. Well,
you can ignore my dumb joke. Feel free to keep going.
But yeah, the movies, the toys, definitely the toys, coloring books, read-along records, lunch boxes, etc. You know, as a kid and as an adult, I still love the Star Wars stuff. I've had several issues that I've gotten off the spinner rack, as we mentioned before, at our local convenience store or grocery store when I was there. Basically, wherever I could find them, I would try to get them, or at least ask my parents to buy them for me. I do have issues 4, 5, and 6 of the series from my childhood. I'm not sure if I got it in a 3-pack or if it was pulled off the shelf at this time. You know, it's been quite a long time that I don't remember.
I'm going to make a wild guess, because we both grew up in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
And I also own issues 4, 5, and 6. I do not own 1, 2, and 3. I only have 4, 5, and 6. I think I'm pretty confident I got them in a 3-pack in a Meijer Thrifty Acre. And I think they're like, I don't know, 4th printing or something ridiculous.
They looked at it.
So I bet we got the same sort of package. Possibly even from the same grocery store chain.
Who knows? Yeah. But with that, it was just fell in love with that, of course, from the movies. That's all we had at the time to re-see the movies that obviously you didn't see, but now you can go back and watch those movies, living those comics to the movies now. But other than that, you know, it'd be random issues here and there that I could get. Interesting thing is, when I started the Long Box Crusade, the second episode I did was with issue number 4. And I went on through that for a little while, because those are what I still had left from my beginning of comic collecting. And so I believe from episode 2 through 11, I'm covering Star Wars. And Jarrett, that's when Jarrett pops on around episode 6. And we're into the Empire. I believe we were covering covering episode 41 at the time.
I sincerely apologize for all of that. I brought Jared into the podcasting world, and I feel really guilty about this.
Well, without that, though, we wouldn't be where we are. And just great friendship that has grown from doing so. So thank you.
Don't turn it into something nice. Ooh,
Well, the other things as a kid, too, and those of you who can't see it, but Shag could, is I have the Empire Strikes Back Scholastic comic book. Very well worn and no cover.
Right. I was going to say, there's no cover on that thing, man.
I think it's missing the second half. The last is where they were just on the back of the starship. The Millennium Falcon was on the back of the starship. The rest, it's probably in a box somewhere else, but
I don't know how this story ends, but I bet Han gets away safely.
Yeah. But that was a cool concept to have. And the way they did it, panel by panel, a couple panels a page. And that was another thing that I would read through and do that. And then I also have the Jedi, Return of the Jedi one as well, too.
I've got that one, too. So I don't have the Empire one, but I've got the Jedi one. Yeah.
So a lot of good stuff, and then started collecting them when the Dark Horse series came out. So, you know, I had more money as a kid, so I got into it more. But my real stuff that I love is the toys. I love the Power of the Force stuff, the series action figures from 1995 and up. I got a full set carded and another set unboxed. That's all thank you to my wife, my girlfriend at the time, mm-hmm. who worked at Walmart. So she had a little in so we could get those stuff. I think that's how she won my love.
She was your pusher.
Yeah, definitely. And then the other thing I have also enjoy is the novels. I've been collecting those for a long time. Now the legendary stuff.
Right.
Those are the Legend series. Since the Thrawn series, I was, man, that series just pulled me into that extended universe. And I have a stack of just stuff to read and read and read of that, along with Shadows of the Empire was another cool novel. And now that they did, that pulled me in as well, too. So, yeah, I've been starting to read through some of the novel stuff. And I had a question. I know you read a lot, too, Shag. I see you going through some of the novels as well, too. And this could be a question for everybody listening, too. Would you read the novel series either in the publication order that they came out? Or would you think you'd read through it in a chronological through the Star Wars kind of timeline? Hmm. Now that there's so much out there to do.
That's a fair question. Personally, I do neither. I jump around. I'm reading a book, I have to follow my muse. I have to, because if I do an index from A to Z or, you know, 1 to 5 or whatever, if there's a bad one in the middle, I'm going to struggle. But if I follow my muse and I'm like, I really want to read that book about the Mandalorian or about the bounty hunters or whatever, that's where I'm more likely going to stay engaged. But if I had to choose, if those were my only two choices though on the table, meaning chronological publication wise or chronological story, you know, fictional timeline, I would go with chronological publication because the stories vary so much from like the way they're written and everything. Like the earlier books are told a certain way, the later books are told a different way, and chronologically they might be right next to each other, and it may not like.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
If you try to read Splinter of Mind's Eye, you know, this right next to a book that was published in, you know, 1999 or something, it's going to be pretty jarring. So for me, I would read in publication. That's how I would do it, and partially because that I love the era, like you said, from basically from Thrawn till probably the beginning of the New Jedi Order. Like I love that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been stuck. I've read Star Wars the original Adventures of Luke Skywalker.
Yeah,
read that. So I'm at that point, do I want to continue chronologically from, you know, the before Battle of Yavin, after all that, or do I want to start from that as the publication and move forward? So I'm still debating that. So I just want to get some wise people to tell me what they would do. But I like the idea, too, of you flipping around.
Or the publication-wise, you're going to hit Splinter Mind's Eye. You're going to hit the Han Solo books. Then you're going to hit the Lando books. Those are some good stuff. Brian Daly, I think his name was off the top of my head.
I think so, yeah.
You're going to hit some fun books if you go that way. So
good thing to think about.
There you go. So I love a lot of the similarities in our paths here with, you know, the comics, the toys. Mm-hmm. Yes, I saw the movies, I guess. the books, all of this stuff. And you mentioned the Walmart, which is so funny because I used to work for a movie theater in post-college. I was manager of these multiplexes. And I'd get off work at like midnight or 2 a.m, whatever. And I would go straight to Walmart to go look for those Power of the Force figures. I'm like, I got to get that Shizor, man. I got to get that Shizor. Not knowing he was going to be a peg warmer anyway. So yeah, I a lot of similarities there, which makes me very happy. So let's ask you now, since you have this, you know, wide swath of Star Wars fandom, what is your favorite Star Wars Expanded Universe character and why? And when I say Expanded Universe, I mean anything, you know, anything outside of the movies and the TV shows, right? So we could be comics, the novels, the RPGs, the holiday special, you know, the Ewok movies, maybe the Star Tours ride. I don't know, whatever. What do you got, buddy?
You know, there is so much to choose from. And I think that's what I think I like about Star Wars is because there's something for everybody nowadays, whether from one extreme to the other, there's definitely the choose from. You could ask me this a couple different times. I'll give you a couple different answers. But one that came to my mind first off was Kyle Katarn from the video games, The Dark Forces from 1995 as well. And that was a fun series of computer games. Being a computer nerd, I was into. And just that you got to play this first person point of view of, you know, running around Star Wars, shooting a blaster at that time. Then later on in the Jedi Knight series that Kyle's in, and he's on his way to kind of becoming a Jedi, kind of reluctantly. But I think he's just that type of guy that has that Luke Skywalker / Han Solo feel to you, for you to be as that player. So me as somebody that wants to be in the Star Wars universe, I could be. And I could kind of project myself through Kyle in the games. And then just what they did with it when they went to the Jedi Knights, they had just the production value that LucasArts was putting into it. The movie segments, you had bits and pieces. It was its own little story by itself that it grew out of. So Kyle's been cool. I'm trying to think, did they make a Power of the Force of Kyle or not?
I don't know if they did Power. They've definitely done a Kyle figure. I don't know what line or what thread it was under, but they've done at least one. I know that much.
Yeah, and just those games as well, too, I would play later on. They had Jedi Outcast with him, and that you can play multiplayer now.
Yeah,
you're playing. We were just nights all night long playing LAN parties and playing with people over the internet. Never was I good, but I always got either blasted by somebody or somebody would just walk by and slice you up, and still had fun. Good fun memories of doing that with friends.
I got to tell you, I suck at video games. Like, I have zero aptitude at video games. I'm terrible. Even going as far back as Pac-Man, just the worst.
Wow.
But I have very happy memories of me and my stepson. We had good times and we had tough times. Being a stepdad's a really hard job. And by the way, if you folks at home, if you're a stepdad, you have my absolute admiration. It is a very hard, underappreciated job. But me and my stepson, when he was about 10, I got a hold of a couple of copies of Jedi Knight 2, Jedi Outcast, because I had played it at a friend's house. You know, again, no aptitude. And we, you know, so this is probably 2009. So this is really far, well into the internet age. But I went and got this old game, and it would run on both our computers. And so we land our computers together. Yeah. And me and my, you know, 10-year-old stepson, we would just, you know, force choke and force push. That was our favorite thing. It was like, you wait till someone's on like a ledge and just force push them off the ledge.
Or you force choke them and then you bring them over to the ledge and then you just drop.
But it's just such a happy memory of me and him just connecting on that and playing for hours on that particular game, Jedi Knight 2, Jedi Outcast. It's such a great one. I'm glad you mentioned it. That's great. That's a lot of happy memories.
It is a great, great fun game, especially, I think, for the multiplayer.
Yeah. Fun. Really good. Really good.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, let's get into this comic, man.
All right.
Star Wars, number 51, published by Marvel Comics, cover date is September 1981, on the shelves June 16th, 1981. Cover price is 50 cents, two shiny quarters. Little Shaggy there at the Sing gas station with his two quarters picking up this comic. I was so excited. Cover by Walt Simonson. Woo! You want to describe it for us?
Sure. So in the corner box, our favorite droid duel looks particularly inconspicuous. You might say these aren't the droids that you're looking for. We've got the classic Marvel Comics group banner and the yellow Star Wars logo we all know and love. And that's a note to myself. I still need to pick up that Lego version of the logo.
Oh, neat.
It's really cool. The primary image features an AT-ST looming over a downed Luke Skywalker. Dressed in his flight gear, Luke is firing his blaster directly into the walker's knee joints. There's a big word balloon that screams, "Resurrection of Evil."
I love this cover. You mentioned 3PO and R2. I say this every month, but I don't care. I love the use of them in that corner box. That's mm-hmm. a drawing by Al Williamson and Carlos Garzon. They've been using it every month since Empire. It just brings me a lot of joy. To me, like if someone were to show me just that image, that would mean Marvel Star Wars to me. Like just that image.
And you would know the era that it was too.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So what do you think of this cover, man?
I love the classic Star Wars logo font. Like as a, when I saw that yellow, I went back to that Lego. I don't know if you've seen that. You can build it and it's just a Star Wars and then in yellow and it's all Lego pieces. It's a cool mantelpiece, I would think. But I've seen what people have done to it. They've kind of modded it a little bit. So you can get little Star Wars, you know, X-Wing, TIE Fighter, things like that to kind of post around it. And I think that would be really cool. But it's that classic Star Wars logo that I like. So again, this is a very eye-catching cover as well, too. With the action scene that's on it, drawing you into this, and the simple backgrounds of the rocks and the hills make Luke and the AT-ST pop, but they're very well detailed. So a lot's going on with that inking. As we know from our friend Jared, inking can be a lot in the Star Wars universe, in the techie universe that's there.
I totally agree on the color choices. You're right. It makes everything pop, just like you said. And in the Star Wars logo itself, it's really interesting the way they did this. They picked that sort of yellowy gold color, and it contrasts so well against the purple background. And they did something interesting. On the Star Wars logo, one of the things Marvel always did is they had an outline around the Star Wars letters. And in this case, they actually made it transparent. So you can see through the outline. So the outline there, but you can see through it and you can see the AT-ST behind it. So that sort of makes the yellow pop even more. I love also Luke when he's firing the blaster. You can see that the way it almost pixelates. I don't know a better way to describe it. It's a Simonson explosion is what it is.
It's got that G.I. Joe kind of look to it too. Blaster of the G.I. Joe blaster kind of look.
Okay.
For the action figures. But yeah, I think that coloring just makes it really shine on this one.
Yeah.
And with the logo, you go back to that see-through look. I like it on comics when they kind of play with the logo a little bit, whether it's in the forefront background, they have things covering it. It's, you know, you've seen them where they're wrecking it.
Right,
just,
right.
That's really cool that they take that and just kind of tweaks things like that, the artists.
And Marvel was really good about that in the 80s, playing with the logo. They know that this is part of the foundation of the book. Like everyone knows the logo. So here's a chance to play with it and really shake it up. And really, it's always a fun thing. And another thing too, by the way, just the cover is really good at showing Luke in jeopardy. You know, he's laying on his back. His feet are stuck in the mud. He's, you know, desperate. He's got this hard edged look on his face. So it really did a great job of conveying the danger. I mean, it's Walt Simonson. Of course, it's going to be gorgeous. That goes without saying. But he just really did a great job on this cover and love it. Absolutely love it. We ready to get inside?
I am.
All right. So as I said, it is the beginning of the era of David Michelinie. He is our writer, folks. Penciler is Walt Simonson. Inker is Tom Palmer. I'm sorry. Everyone's got formal names here. It's Walter Simonson is the penciler. Inker is Thomas Palmer. Letterer is John Morelli instead of Jack Morelli. Colorist is Don Warfield. Editor is Louise Jones, who of course will later on go to be Louise Simonson. I mean, she's already married to Walt at this point, but she'll change her name eventually. And then editor, or Ed, it says here, Ed in chief, not editor, is James Shooter, not Jim Shooter. So apparently feeling very formal here in the beginning of Mr. Michelinie's run, folks.
But they knew they had something special, so they wanted to make it.
They got their Sunday's best on.
Yes.
All right. So I'll do a brief recap and then we're going to break it down in like chunks of pages. So here's the brief recap. It is called Resurrection of Evil. Our story begins by following three groups of Star Warriors: Princess Leia and C-3PO, Luke Skywalker and R2-D2, and Lando Calrissian and Chewbacca. But their separate adventures soon bring them together when General Ryken receives word from rebel spies that the Empire is constructing a terrifying new super weapon, the Tarkin. Recognizing the threat, Ryken calls upon the heroes who survived the original Death Star, Luke, Leia, Chewbacca, C-3PO, and R2-D2, and they are sent to the planet Hakaleg, where they must infiltrate an Imperial construction crew and find a way aboard the Tarkin. And Lando is not happy about being left out of the adventure. But they aren't going unnoticed. Darth Vader's watching as the rebels infiltrate the massive weapon, and he sees an opportunity to finally capture his long-sought adversary, Luke Skywalker. Yet, Vader may have a problem of his own. Behind the scenes, Imperial officers are beginning to plot against the Dark Lord. Pushed to the breaking point by his brutal punishments, the final panel sees these Imperial officers all chant, "Darth Vader must die!" Dun, 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 dun. Dun, dun. All right. So let's break it down here. So the first few pages is all about this rebel spy. So it starts off with, you've got the Nebulon B frigate in space. That's the Rebel Alliance we saw at the end of Empire Strikes Back. This X-Wing comes flying in, completely out of control. And we're told in the caption boxes that there's a spy in here, Maraba Tev. He's been a rebel spy amongst the Empire. Anyway, he comes flying through, smashes into the Nebulon B frigate. He's not slowing down. So they got to throw out these magnetic grappling hooks. They grab the X-Wing. He's still not stopping. Even though he's grappled, he's still not stopping. So they have to actually blast the wings off of the X-Wing. They shear it right off there. They bring in the fuselage and find out the poor man's already dead. That's why he came jetting in there and didn't stop. And we see General Reiken, who I keep calling by the wrong name, General Reiken. Mm-hmm. And he says that they have got a problem and they need to recall a trio of different groups. So what do you think of these first few pages?
That first splash page, man. Oh, just the detail on that. And you got that frigate and just reminds me again, too, of going back to some of the video games. Have you ever played like X-Wing, TIE Fighter? You may not have played those games, but oh, those games, to see ships like these in front of you, which is full detail, 3D art at the time. Amazing. And being able to fly a star, an X-Wing and a TIE fighter, just fun games.
I'll tell you a super quick story about that. I promise it won't be long. As I mentioned, I have zero aptitude for video games. So I sucked at these games. My friends owned them. In fact, a couple of friends of mine that I did this with are listening right now. So they're probably laughing. I was so bad. I wasn't allowed to play, but I was allowed to sit there at their keyboard and I was allowed to play the shields. I was like full front, full back. I would operate the shields while they shot things up.
Ah, so. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's important.
That's my extent. I watched the games a lot. I just never really played.
Yeah. And that was hard, too, for if you were a guy flying it, you needed somebody. You need that co-pilot, right? that R2 unit.
Yeah, so, I was an R2.
R2, you was an R2.
I never thought of it that way. But yes, the Nebulon B frigate looks amazing. Yeah. It looks so good. And I started thinking, like, obviously, Simonson and Palmer are amazing, right? And I've talked on previous episodes how Palmer, he would build the model kits, and he would hold them up.
Yeah, I heard that. Yeah.
He would build the model kits. He'd have his son hold them up. He'd take photos so he could use them. I don't think there was a Nebulon B frigate model kit back then. So this had to just come from photo reference. So that is really impressive that they were able to do the ship in, you know, several different angles, all from photo reference. So great on them.
True. And again, another inking nightmare if you're an inker too.
Right.
It's beautiful, but definitely time consuming to do that. But well done. I like the grappling hook as well, too. That's a cool idea. I never thought about that, of a ship coming through there like that. How would you stop them?
Right.
But they have these grappling hooks that kind of just suction on and stop it and pull it. However, having to blast the back end of that off. We were talking off the show. Remind me of the Battlestar Galactica, the Viper, and the toy that I have, it breaks off in that kind of capsule, that nose capsule area where you have the cockpit in the nose, and then the back end can come off as well. So that's what it reminded me of when I saw this page, and brought back some other memories too of playing with that toy.
And when you showed me the Viper and separated it, it looks exactly like the fuselage of an X-Wing. Yeah. I never noticed that. Yeah. And it's really cool. And it's really done artistically in a neat way where you're seeing the X-Wing. It is pulling against those grappling wires, right? It is struggling because he's got full throttle too.
Yeah,
exactly. He's dead. It's at full throttle. There's no way to stop it. And so it's the X-Wing is actually almost vibrating. It's trying to shake loose from the grapplers. And I thought the grapplers were very cool too. Really interesting way to do that. Cause I mean, I've always thought like the tractor beam that you see in Star Wars needs to be a more powerful ship, probably, you know, like the Death Star had one, things like that. It has to be a really powerful ship to have the tractor beam. And I don't imagine it's very quick to grab something. Like in this case, they need to snatch it out of the air immediately, you know? And so I think this is a neat way. It looks cool visually too.
Yeah. You know, as being a friend of somebody who has some military service experience, Jared would like to say, you know, I think this basically, it's kind of like what they would use on an aircraft carrier. When the plane comes in for a landing, they have that thing that kind of pulls them back and you know, helps stop them from continuing forward like that. But, you know, I'm no military expert, but I do, you know, I have a friend that is.
There you go. And we've all seen Top Gun. So
Yeah, we have all seen Top Gun. We know how that all works, but it's just sad that the guys, you know, didn't make it,
yeah,
of course, but still had to, at least he did get his mission done to get that canister there with that important note.
And it sounds like he died like four and a half heartbeats or something before that he gets there. Like he died right as he gets to the Rebel Alliance, which is poor Captain Maraba Tev. Well, poor one out for you, buddy.
This is Star Wars is the worst for me trying to pronounce names. I have a hard time saying creator names.
Yeah. Okay.
Now I got these.
Apparently I can't say Riken properly either. So,
but yeah, and I also like that General Riken says they throw in some Star Wars quotey ways of that the three warriors could possibly be their only hope. Where have we heard that before?
Right, exactly. Good choice of words there. I didn't even notice that. And it's a pretty good likeness of General Riken as well. I like it. Looks pretty good. So yeah, good stuff. All right, you ready to move on?
Yeah, let's go ahead.
Let's do it. So then the next segment features Leia and 3PO. So this is roughly pages 3 through 5. And they have landed on this jungle planet because they're trying to find a new base to replace Hoth, right? That's what the Rebel Alliance is doing. They've lost Hoth. They need a new permanent headquarters. So they're out searching, and Leia and 3PO are out on this planet. They're examining it. There's all these cool mushrooms, very, you know, Simonson, almost Williamson-ish.
Psychedelic-y.
Yeah, exactly. And they think they're onto something. And then this giant orange creature comes out of nowhere and surprises them. And 3PO identifies it as a Gundark, which we all have all heard of before. Well, we'll talk about that in a minute. But they're these huge quadruped creatures. They got four legs. They're big and orange, almost like kind of like the body of a dinosaur, almost like small. Yeah. But they've got this giant elongated neck, and they have this giant elongated head that comes with an open gaping mouth that shoots out a giant sticky tongue. So they're in danger. Looks like they're going to get them. And Leia tells 3PO, go jump on top of that mushroom. And 3PO's like, what am I doing this? Anyway, he goes up there and Leia times it just right where there's one creature on each side of the mushroom. They both shoot their tongues out to get 3PO, and she blasts the mushroom at the last second, gets 3PO out of the way, and the two Gundarks have now tied their own tongues together in a knot. And at that moment, they run back to the ship and find out that they're being recalled to the fleet, so they gotta go. So that's that sort of thing there. For me, I gotta mention real quick, this is the first appearance of the Gundarks in expanded media. I had to look that up. Okay. So the first, and you know, we all know the line from Empire Strikes Back, you know, hey, Luke, you look strong enough to pull the ears off a Gundark, you know, is what that line is. Mm-hmm. It's sort of ironic that they drew the Gundarks without ears, by the way.
Yeah, these are way different looking. I looked it up.
I'm like,
what does a Gundark look like? And this does not look like what a Gundark looks like.
Right, now. But you know, if the only thing they have to go on is you look strong enough to pull the ears off a Gundark, you think they would have gave the creature ears.
Seriously,
I'm just saying. But by sheer coincidence, bizarrely, this morning I jog a couple times a week on the treadmill in my garage. And when I do it, I watch TV just to keep myself distracted because I hate to exercise and I got to distract myself. I was watching Clone Wars this morning, and the Gundarks, the ones you just described, were on the show. So I actually saw Gundark ears from Clone Wars. So that was bizarrely coincidental.
Yeah. Funny how that works out like that.
Right. So what do you think of this section?
This was a very weird section that you mentioned. That kind of psychedelic-y, off-beaten planet. The colors really make this thing triply, you know, it just giving me that trippy feeling of a planet. But it was a fun section to see Princess Leia off with C-3PO and just how tactfully she can be, knowing what to do when ordering C-3PO to do what he needs to do. And of course, 3PO just being 3PO himself, like, oh, well, I don't really want to, but I guess I got to do it. And then him being on that mushroom, I guess, is really all you can really say that is, you know, he's like, yoo-hoo, and trying to call him over by him just to get them to fight each other. And then with Leia just being blasting the tree away and the tongues getting all tangled up like that. It's interesting. I like how we see different ideas for planets. Mm-hmm. And I think throughout this series, you get a wide variety of everything that any planet could be. So this is somebody's mind that they thought about this planet.
It's almost like a Dr. Seuss planet or something with the psychedelic kind of stuff going on.
Yeah, and that's a good way of putting it.
And I love that, you know, Michelini and Walt Simonson and Palmer were able to build it in less than 3 pages.
Yeah.
It's less than 3 pages, and yet you get an exciting, you get some talky talk, you get some exciting action, you get some laser guns, you see creatures. I mean, you get a lot in 3 pages, and it's pretty exciting, actually. So I think it's really well done. And for me, the biggest thing I realized when I reread this was those two tongues by the Gundarks that get wrapped up and all tied in a knot. Mm-hmm. That is actually probably my strongest memory of this issue from when I was a kid. For whatever reason, that panel has stuck in my head all these years. So
did it scare you at night? Could you not sleep?
Probably, I was probably laying awake in
you
bed.
Wake up and next thing you know, you got two dogs looking at you.
Right.
Like, no, no.
Not the Gundark tongues. Not the Gundark tongues.
I'll be good. I'll be good.
Right. So, but no, it's almost like just a silly gimmick bit, but it works really well. It shows what the creative team can do. And hey, 3PO's kind of the action star here.
And they build it up. 3PO builds up the suspense of it all. Like, oh, you don't want to get caught by those things because they'll never let you go.
Right.
And you're like, oh, okay, yeah, these things can be scary if I get licked by those things. And the shot of Princess Leia's face on this one, I think realistically looks somewhat like Carrie on this one, a little bit.
Yeah. Talking about where she's on the bottom of that first page where she's talking to 3PO. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're pretty good with the likenesses. Now, I will say Luke, as because we're going to go into the next section here about Luke. Luke's likeness is interesting to me. Like, I've always kind of said that he doesn't look like Mark Hamill in the Star Wars comics. However, Simonson and Palmer have a way of drawing Luke that, to me, that's what Luke looks like. You know, yes. That in my head, that works. In fact, not that I don't want to keep stroking this guy's ego, but Jared was once telling me that for one of his book page sketches, he had to draw Luke Skywalker. And he's like, that is a hard dude to draw. So apparently Mark Hamill is hard to draw.
But maybe that's what makes Mark Hamill so good at the different characters he can play, because you never know what he's doing.
There you go.
He's a chameleon.
So Luke and 3PO have landed his X-Wing on a what looks like a volcanic mud planet. And they are also seeking a new base, a permanent base for the rebels. And they're picking up something on their sensors. They're picking up some metal in this big, gloopy, messy tower of mud. So they go over there to investigate it. And Luke realizes, uh-oh, that's not just, trash. That is a communications beacon. And it's still active. And at that point, Luke is shot at by an AT-ST, a scout walker. Or for you kids at home, the chicken walker. I hate that phrase. Anyway, so the walker is chasing Luke down. And then a couple of AT-ATs show up as well. So Luke is in a pinch here. The AT-ST starts shooting at the X-Wing. And then Luke distracts them by using some explosives to attack the communications beacon, which then thankfully draws the Imperials away. So Luke is able to sort of maneuver around them, gets out his lightsaber, and actually cuts the leg off of one of the AT-STs. It collapses, and him and R2 jump on the X-Wing and get the heck out of there right as they get the signal to regroup with the fleet. So what do you think about this section, buddy?
Well, we kind of talked about the likeness of Luke on this one. I think they give a good kind of side panel, facial side panel of him as well. And he's different, but I think they get the characteristics of him done really well. So it's Luke to me when I look at it. I like how Luke uses the typical Star Wars phrase again here. I've got a bad feeling about this. Once he uncovers the satellite or the homing beacon thing that they have, the transmitter that they have going on there. I did have a question. What, was Vader on this planet that Luke was on, or did they just call him about finding the rebel on the planet? I think it's the latter as we go through here, but that was just one of the questions I jotted down when I was reading through. Another thing is I like Luke blowing up the transmitter to make a great distraction so he can get back to the X-Wing and try to get out of there.
Hey, I got to say, the X-Wing and all the Imperial vehicles, they look amazing. They look so good. I mean, just incredible attention to detail. The only thing, and this, it's not even really a criticism. It's just one thing I noticed, like the AT-ST, he has red feet.
Yeah.
Which is a strange choice. But
maybe there's different things that they put on the bottom of their feet depending on the planets they're on. So maybe this one's a little more squishy. So you know it's like, you don't want to walk out in mud. Do you put good shoes on when you go walking in the mud, Chick? When you go running?
right exactly. So they're not wearing their Sunday best shoes for the mud planet. That makes sense.
Was it ever figured out? I've been listening to your shows, these episodes. I'm two away from where we are right now.
Very kind of you to listen. You should find better things to do with your ears. But anyway,
it puts me to sleep, so I like that part of it. But seriously, you guys talked about in one episode, where did Luke get his lightsaber?
Right.
Where is this coming from again? I don't know, but
they never explain it in the comics. The letters page has addressed it a couple of times, and they're just like, oh, Luke got another one or whatever. They don't get into that. They leave it vague. But you could assume either he retrieved it from Bespin, which we know he didn't do in later years, or he just picked up another one. Because at this point, I mean, they've got two movies to work from. That's all they've got. So for all they know, know, you could go into any, you know, thrift store and find, you know, an archaic lightsaber that could just be left over from the Clone Wars, right? Or whatever. So we just assume he just picked one up. Now, I'm glad you mentioned it, because there's an interesting thing here is that they actually show a close-up of the hilt of the lightsaber here. And Simonson and Palmer have drawn it to look just like his previous lightsaber. So one could try and argue this is the same lightsaber or maybe the same model production. Because even back then, we didn't know that Jedi made their own lightsabers. You know, they had no idea. So they could have just, you go to the local, you know, dime store and pick up your lightsaber, whatever.
You can go to Watto's retail swap meet and pick it up.
So it does look exactly the same as the previous one. So at the end of the day, it's Star Wars. Do I really want to read a Star Wars comic where Luke doesn't have a lightsaber? So you just say okay and go with it.
But in doing so, you get that great panel of him just slicing that leg right off of the AT-ST. And with that, it's like, okay, can an AT-ST walk on one leg? Can it hop on one leg?
I don't think it can. And Luke actually asks the same question. He says, I always wondered what a walker would do with only one leg. Well, I wonder that as well after you see those movies, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I think this is what we see on the cover, right?
Somewhat
close to it. So we get that close to cover pictorial that's going on in the book. But I think this is a great, and that first segment of the fighter coming in, but this is a great way to play with the toys. This would have taught me as a kid, is like, oh man, I got to get these toys and play with them this way.
It is like a little toy advertisement, isn't it? Yeah, you're a good point. I hadn't thought of it that way. And in some ways, it's Michelini playing with the toys, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's got all, and I'll talk a little more about that later, but I mean, this is an opportunity to, these little great 3-page vignettes is what we're getting here. And he's playing with all kinds of concepts, all kinds of characters, all kinds of toys and all this stuff. And he's just having fun. But at the same time, he is firmly planting this in the Star Wars universe. These are all iconic Star Wars things we've seen in this particular segment, very embedded in Empire Strikes Back. So he knows what he's doing. I really enjoyed the, I felt like there was a really good surprise here for the reader and when Luke's ambushed by the Empire, because, you know, Luke's sitting there looking at the transmitter, you flip the page and that's when stuff starts blowing up. So it's a really effective way down there. I mean, I guess the cover did kind of show you what's going to happen, but I wasn't thinking about that when I'm reading the comic, you know, when he discovers the communications tower. So it worked for me. Then also I fell down a big old nerd rabbit hole here. So the AT-ST is sitting there blasting away at the X-Wing's shields. And I am such a dork. I actually took the time to get out my West End Games role-playing book discover if the AT-ST would have a problem shooting through the X-Wing's shields. Now, for those of you who play the game at home, and I know a few of you are listening, feel free to tell me I'm wrong. But there is a difference between these types of vehicles, which makes it a little more challenging for a walker to hurt a starfighter, but not a lot. It's only a little bit of an effort. So I really think they shouldn't have had any trouble getting through the shields. I mean, I guess they, unless in game terms, they rolled really badly. They should have been able to get through the shields. May not have damaged the hull of the ship, but they should have been getting through the shield. But anyway.
What would they have to roll in order to do that?
Well, it depends on the distance and all this stuff, but it would have been basically, a moderate roll with a 2-dice modifier because he's having to go from a walker scale to a starfighter scale. I mean, in game terms, you roll 18, 15, whatever, you're probably going to do it. Yeah, okay. I would think so. Now, again, you GMs at home can argue with me about this. And I know the role-playing game came out after this comic, and they don't care about this kind of stuff. And I'm just being super dorky, but I know there's, again, people listening who will be happy to hear me discuss this and correct me in the comment section, if you will.
But that's a good thing, because even the AT-ST, the guys are like, hey, we're just going to keep blasting this thing and we're going to penetrate it eventually.
Yep.
And that's where Luke gets that distraction going on to cut the leg off, get out of there and, you know, save his shield as much as he can.
Yep. Good stuff. All right, we ready to go on?
Let's go ahead.
Let's do it. So then pages 9 through 11, we end up catching up with Lando and Chewie. So they are flying through space and they are chasing another ship. They're chasing the ship of Shem Lern is his name. He's flying a separate ship and he apparently knows where to find Boba Fett, who obviously has Han Solo.
What? Boba Fett? Boba Fett's here?
Well played. Well played. And so they're chasing him because they want to get information. And so they're shooting warning shots across his bow. So they're not actually shooting him, but across his bow. Shem Lern goes into an asteroid field and Chewie's like, let's go. And Lando's like, look, bro, I'll freely admit I'm not as good a pilot as Han. I'm not okay with this. And that is when they're recalled by General Riken to come back. And Lando's ready to go. He's like, okay, we got hauled back. And Chewie's like, oh, no, you don't. We are going to get my buddy Han. And he actually swats Lando's hand away away from the controls. But in the end, the alien had got away into the asteroid field anyway. So they depart off to regroup with the Rebel Alliance. And Chewie is very mournful and sad because he didn't get to find the path to Han. What do you think of this segment?
I think this is a good segment for characteristics between Chewie and Lando, their friendship, their angsty against each other. You know, Lando's trying to prove himself as that he's a good guy and that he's a friend of Han, and obviously was a friend of Chewie as well too, until they did all the behind the scene backstabbing that he did. But I think seeing these are good moments in between for me of, and we'll see it again with him and Leia, just how the relationships went from Empire to where we saw them in Jedi. And this era of comic is great way to things that they were doing to build those relationships back up again.
That's a great point though, because when you watch Empire, I mean, Lando betrays them straight up. He helps them, but get away. But like, 5 minutes later, he's wearing Han's clothes, flying Han's ship, a little awkward there. Mm-hmm. And by Empire, they're all best friends. So you're right. The comics is this great opportunity because I don't really think of, maybe there's a little bit in Shadows of the Empire, but I can't think of any books where they really spend a lot of time forcing the reader to learn how Luke and Leia and Chewie eventually came to consider Lando such a trusted friend.
Yeah, I guess then that's where we see a little of that. Definitely in Shadows of the Empire, you get that more background of what they were doing, how they were doing it. And then to finally get that, that all happy moment when they're on back on Tatooine and they're in Jabba's place and everybody's there working together as a good team.
Yeah.
Let's go to the ships.
Yeah.
This guy's ship and the one Leia was flying too.
Mm-hmm.
Besides, if it wasn't an already known Star Wars ship, they really went really kind of, I don't want to say kind of out there in a way with these ships, but I thought were pretty cool. It reminded me of looks that you would see more sleeker, a spacecraft kind of from like the Episode One era a little bit. That's what it brought me back, but just real different from what you would normally see, from the movies and down the road, what normal ships would look like. So,
no, I agree. Because, if you look at Star Wars, you look at Empire, those ships at this point looked what I call dirty tech, or functional tech, really. Like the Star Destroyers are more like functional tech. Yeah. And neither of these ships look like that. You're right. Like the one that this Shem Learn guy, it looks like a ship on a power pack, really, is what it looks like. Yeah. And that's, it's a cool look. And it comes, like you said, it comes down to not having a model to work from. And so the artist is just being creative. And I think it's a cool looking ship, but you're right. It does have a very sleek look and it doesn't quite fit with some of the other Star Wars ships. And I don't think it's a bad thing, but it is definitely doesn't stick out quite like a sore thumb, but it is noticeable. Absolutely.
And then the alien characters that they do come across as well too is a little bit different.
Yeah.
This guy I think could probably be from the Droids series, cartoon series.
Well, he looks like a praying mantis or something like that.
Like Crack.
I love his word. Yeah, he does look like Brack. I love his word balloon. It's like, it's got sketchy lines, and instead of just a single arrow, it's got like a trident the way it pokes, and it has a coloring to it and stuff like that. Pretty cool. Neat idea.
Yeah, definitely. I liked when they do that with word bubbles, where they make it their own. And going through the Transformers Marvel years, the Transformers, when they talk, has got this, a robot-y kind of look balloon, where the normal humans got normal word balloon look. So I like it when they can do, and see-through bills in here as well too. They distinguish those stuff out.
His word balloons are always square with a little rounded edge, and they're always like yellow. So very much so. And I love that Lando admits that Han's a better pilot than him. Because, that's what it is. Lando's strength is being a con man, not being the pilot. So I like that they put that in there. It works well. And really, between all three of these scenes, again, three little vignettes, they all got their own little level of excitement. And it works really well in that it works out to be exactly half the issue. It's it's a 22-page comic or so, and the first 11 pages is the setup. So it's really good pacing by Michelini. And just so you guys know, this is going to be a two-parter. And so we don't get a lot of those around this period of Star Wars. So it's nice that he was, first of all, for his very first story, was allowed to do a two-parter, and that he paced it so well. I thought it was really well done.
I was going
to
ask that, Shay. Was this is the first time from past Empire that they are doing a two-parter?
At least, yes, since Empire. Now, they did some before, certainly, before Empire, but since Empire, this is their first two-parter. Exactly right, yeah. I mean, a lot of it was treading water. I mean, after Empire, they basically spent a long time doing just single character stories, like Luke had an adventure, or Leia had an adventure, mm-hmm. or Lando and Chewie had an adventure, whatever, the droids. They each had their own individual ones, and then they finally all came back together for issue 50, and now we're getting into what happened next. So this is the kind of the first one that feels like we're saying, okay, here's where the new adventures start.
Ah, all right.
That's what it feels like to me. But then again, I've got total nostalgia goggles on here. All right, well, let's get going. So then they've regrouped with the fleet. We've got General Ryken. He is giving a briefing. So a little reminiscent of the briefing in Star Wars. He's giving a briefing to our Star Warriors, telling them all about this new super weapon that the Imperials are designing, that they've got the plans for. It's called the Tarkin. And it is basically, the way he describes it, is just the laser from the Death Star surrounded by engines. So it's not the big ball. It's just the gun and engines. And so they're terrified. They're not sure what to do. And so they have decided that the best thing they can do is send the same people that survived the Death Star, which is, of course, Leia, Luke, the droids, and Chewie, send them onto the Tarkin to try and figure out a way to stop this thing. Meanwhile, we get a little cutaway to Darth Vader on the Executor on his ship. He is confronting the Imperial soldier who lost Luke on that mud planet, and the guy's making excuses, and Vader decides he's had enough. Vader commands the guy, using the Force, tells him to take a long walk and some fresh air would help clear his mind. And then the guy walks away, obviously out of control, mumbling words. And then they get a report that the airlock just opened and closed of its own volition. Vader's like, how curious. A faulty mechanism, no doubt. You know, he told the guy to take a long walk off a, off a short airlock. So what do you think of this section?
Oh, man, a lot to go through, I think, on this section with the different things that are happening. One interesting thing, question I had is that General Ryken brought up was, why has the Empire hasn't constructed a second battle station like the Death Star that almost destroyed their base on Yavin? You know, did somebody have some insight before Return of the Jedi that this was maybe about? Did some editor not worry about this, or just because it was so different that, you know, they're like, okay, well, yeah, we can let this go. It's fine.
So I don't know if you read my notes or not.
I haven't yet.
Oh, okay. No. Well, you set up the perfect question. So yes, they obviously in this story, they have built a weapon very similar to the Death Star. And yet they're pointing out that why hasn't the Empire built the Death Star? So I have some quotes here I'm going to read to you from Back Issue Magazine, issue number 9. This is an article by Glenn Greenberg, and he interviewed a whole bunch of people. So we're going to start off here with some quotes from Walt Simonson about this issue. It says, David Michelinie's first idea was a pretty obvious one. His idea was to have the Empire decide to build a new Death Star and put chicken wire over the exhaust port so the rebels wouldn't be able to get them that way again. And then the Empire could go out and kick ass. As Lucasfilm got back to us and said, you can't do that. We can't tell you why, but you can't do that. Mm-hmm. Then David Michelinie recalls, when the idea of creating a second Death Star was bumped, I was kind of like, oh, cool. Guess what's going to happen in the next movie? I kind of enjoyed that. Now, Louise Simonson then said, whenever they told us we couldn't do something, we knew that was going to be in the next movie. Wow. So the team solution was to have the Empire build what was essentially a giant cannon in space that could blow up planets, but it wouldn't be drawn as a circular object. And Lucasfilm approved it. So Louis Simonson says, we did exactly the same story we would have done, except we called it the Tarkin. It was really a Death Star without the circular cover, she said as she laughed. So there you go. So this was going to be a second Death Star. Okay. And Lucasfilm said, no, we can't tell you why, but you can't do that.
Interesting. Very interesting. I think that's a great idea. Of course, it worked out for for George when they wrote it. But interesting that they had the same concept that he was doing then again, too.
I just want to say about that, too. I think this is the beginning of seeing David Michelinie come up with ideas that echo forward. Like, he has a lot. And actually, that guy's name again. Jared.
There it is again.
Jared and I did an episode of his Indiana Jones show. And it was an issue written by David Michelinie. And we were talking about all these things he threw in the comic that echo forward to later Indiana Jones stories. And he's just really good for getting into the zeitgeist of whatever the property he's writing. And again, it's those flash forwards. He's coming up with ideas that end up in movies later.
Yeah. That's a good sign of a good creator like that. That, hey, I thought of that too. And wouldn't it be cool? And very, very neat. With this, the name of the Tarkin, cool name, respect. Got to respect that. Definitely. And then just the design of it, the ion cannon is, they don't really say, was it built? or I don't think it's left from the old one. Obviously, that thing blew up, right?
Yeah, I was gonna say, that one kind of blew up. So I think it's a new one.
So it's kind of a new one.
I'm sure someone kept the blueprints. So, I mean, you know.
Someone's got them somewhere.
Speaking of blueprints, did you notice on the blueprint for the Tarkin in this comic, if you, like, I'm looking at it both my physical comic and digitally on Marvel Unlimited. If you look really closely on the blueprint, you can see three people's names. Walt Simonson, Tom Palmer, and Louise Jones are all, their names are all written on the blueprint in really small letters.
That is cool.
It is very hard to see it in the printed comic, but in the digital, it's I don't want to say Claire's day, but you're like, oh, yeah, there it is. Yeah.
If you squint hard enough and zoom into it, you can definitely see it. I like that when they do little nods and winks like that.
Yeah, it's fun.
That's cool. One of the fun parts about this is Luke lounging in that chair. He's got one leg hanging over the armrest stuff with his arm back on the back of the cushion, just, you know, hanging out like he's at a barbecue or something, just waiting for...
Looks like Archie Bunker sitting in a chair or something.
Let's jump over to Vader. We do find out that, from my question, he wasn't on the planet.
Yep.
So obviously he was on his Star Destroyer, the Executor, another cool ship that we get to see. And just his presence there. And I just love that hint, as you said, told that major to go take a walk outside and get some fresh air out of the airlock. And Vader with that cool, must be some mechanical... faulty mechanical issue going on there. Oh.
It's a brutal way to kill a guy. It's almost a little too cute. Like, I don't know that this would have made it into a movie kind of thing.
I don't think it would play good in.
Yeah, but it works well here. I mean, I'm fine with it. It shows how menacing it is, and it feeds into the plot later in the issue we'll talk about too.
Definitely does. And that the interesting plan that they have to get, you know, sneak on board the Tarkin and take it down from the inside.
Mm-hmm.
I like that idea. Do they really have to bring these guys back? I think anybody could have really done it. What's so special with them? It's like, what did they really do? Nothing. It was Ben that did it, right?
Yeah.
And then they blew it up from the outside, not the inside.
I love that you mentioned all that, because I'm thinking the same thing. Like, the entire Rebel Alliance is just basically sitting on their hands waiting for Luke, Leia, Chewie, and the droids to show up.
Yeah.
And, like, just because they ran around the Death Star in the trash compactor one time, I mean, I get it. It moves the comic plot forward, but I'm not sure it's the most sound plan the Rebels have ever come up with.
I could have seen maybe sending one of them there or somebody, but not. You don't need the rest of them there. It doesn't make sense to me.
They've got a lot of Rebels they could send.
Yeah.
ones that are also not wanted necessarily by the Empire.
Yeah. I suppose they didn't know that Vader was actually there on that ship when, well, I guess we'll get to that part. Neat plan, at least how to get on it. And let's go and look at this is a major threat. I think it's a high level threat right now for the Rebels that they had to call people back from looking for bases.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. One thing I didn't specifically say in the recap was that Leia totally snubs Lando, gives him the cold shoulder, because Lando's a little put out, because he's like, all of his buddies, right, are going in this mission. He's not invited because he wasn't on the Death Star. He's like, what am I supposed to do? And Leia says, why don't you try looking out for yourself, Lando? You seem to do it so well. So Michelini is building what you and I talked about earlier here, that strife, the people who don't trust Lando yet. So I like that in here. It's not necessarily consistent with the previous issues, but it's a cool subplot development. It should be there because there should be consequences for what Lando did on Bespin. Absolutely.
I'm not sure what happens in the next issue. I'm definitely looking forward to listening to it, reading it along as we go. But I guess I'm sure that's probably a plot where, Lando's going to come swooping in and help out the best that he can.
It's got to be something. Yeah, you're all clear, kid. That kind of thing or whatever. All right, so let's go on. We'll race towards the end here. So the last few pages, we have got the Falcon. It arrives at the planet Hockleg, or Hockleg, which is the most ludicrous name for a planet, which just cracks me up every time I hear it.
I think you got to pronounce it like this, Hockleg.
And so what it is it's this, sort of dirty planet or dirty city that floating above them is the Tarkin. The Tarkin is in orbit above this planet. So all the workers are coming down to this planet for R&R or their days off or whatever. And so they are our heroes arrive there and they decide they need some uniforms. We need to get some uniforms to sneak on board. So Luke tells Leia to use her feminine wiles to distract some of these guys. So she's like, hey there, fly boy, new in town. Well, the guy takes that message and pretty much gets right in her face and is ready to take her up on that offer. And she's not ready. So she falls apart. She's not used to the feminine wiles things. So she does instead what we'd expect Leia to do. And she clocks him. She knocks him on his butt, which is great. Chewie takes out the other guy. They get some uniforms. They sneak aboard the Tarkin. You get an amazing splash page of the Tarkin in space. We'll talk more about it in a bit, but it's a full page splash of the Tarkin. It is really impressive. It is, like they said, it's basically the radar dish from the Death Star surrounded by engines. So they get aboard the Tarkin. And while they're leaving their shuttle, Darth Vader is watching as they leave, and he senses Luke's presence that he's been looking, scouring the galaxy to find. He figures out that Luke is there, and they decide that to just leave Luke as he'll be, leave him alone. Don't arrest him, because soon his actions will, and Luke will be all Vader's. So then, as it ends, one of the Imperial officers goes down into the bowels of the ship, into this disused area, and meets up with several other Imperial officers, and they're conspiring against Vader. They're tired of Vader treating the fellow Imperial soldiers in terrible ways, having them meet these inhuman ends at the Sith Lord's hand. And so they all in agreement, they all grab hands and scream, Darth Vader must die! So they're not trying to help the rebels the way they see it. They're trying to help the Imperials.
It's like, kind of like they got to get HR involved here and all this. And discrepancies between upper management and then the normal workers going on.
They're clearly not doing 360 degree reviews. That's clearly,
definitely. None of that going on right now. Surveys on how are you doing? How are you like us?
I love there would be like a little suggestion box, right?
Yeah, you slide it into like Vader's, like his chest plate right there, right there. That's where you slide it in.
Right in the coin slot. So what'd you think of this one or this section?
Oh, well, let's go. The art of the Millennium Falcon breaking the hyperspace is just a great looking panel with the circles and the fire from the engine coming out and the detail of the Millennium Falcon just kind of fast lines coming right by like that. What a great looking panel that is.
And that's consistent with last issue too, that Simonson loves drawing, or actually, I guess it was issue 49. Anyway, Simonson loves drawing the Falcon coming out of hyperspace in different ways. And it just, this is such a cool look,
Yeah. I could like take pictures like that and just paste them on your wall, a little different Falcon movement like that. That'd be kind of cool. I like how Luke explains to Leia, as you mentioned, to use her feminine wiles. It's like, well, okay, she handed something. I mean, she got Han, but
right,
you know, and she used it a little bit to play Han against Luke and Luke, you know, on Hoth and all that. So she knows what she needs to do, but it's just funny when the guy comes into Leia's face and get right up to her and is okay, let's go. I got a couple minutes. Don't, you know? I guess we've all been there for that, but. I thought it was a way Leia then ruins the mood and just, you know, cracks him right across the face that way.
Well, I can kind of get it. Like, she's trying to flirt with him and he goes straight to, literally says, what do you say we go someplace and get real tired real fast? I mean, he is ready to go. And so she's like, that's a little too fast, a little too forward for her. And then she clocks him. So, well, he does say, like, give us a kiss. Yeah. So that's when she's had enough.
Yeah. She's like, okay, we're done. Boom.
Yep.
Cold clocks him out. And then Chewie takes care of the rest of the guy. And then I like, as they're walking away, it's like, they think they mentioned, you know, don't worry, Chewie. No, nobody expects a Wookiee to wear a uniform. Imagine seeing Chewie. I don't think I've ever seen him in a uniform at all. I mean, even on Hoth, he doesn't wear a uniform. He's just out there with his, you know, hair out and enjoying it.
The closest we've probably seen was Mala in the holiday special wearing a kitchen apron.
That's true. Oh, the holiday special.
Oh, yeah.
Then someone says, the Empire doesn't make any mistakes, Gruber.
Yes.
Grubber. I'm like, Grubber, that's a weird name to tell somebody. But
so I do have a question here. Luke uses the Jedi mind trick on the stormtrooper. Yeah. You even see the two fingers, and I don't know the answer to this, so I'm just putting this out there as speculation. I think I don't know, this might be the first time Luke uses the Jedi mind trick in expanded universe stuff, because I mean, he doesn't do it in Empire. It's not till Return that he starts doing that, and I don't know the pre-Empire comics well enough to know if he tried. Okay. But this is certainly the first time I remember seeing him use the Jedi mind trick. Because, I mean, it's one thing to float a rock. It's another thing to toy with somebody's mind. I mean, that's a big thing, especially in the Star Wars canon. That's where you're starting to, you know, you're almost teetering towards dark side when you fiddle with people's brains. So I'd love to hear from you people at home. Can you think of other examples of where Luke used the Jedi mind trick? And I don't mean stuff that was published after this. I mean, stuff that was published in 1981 or prior where we see that.
Yeah. And obviously he's not trying it on Yoda when he was training on Dagobah. You know, it's like,
right,
come on, I'm Yoda.
Yeah.
You're going to try to do Jedi mind trick on me?
Right, exactly.
I think Yoda could probably just play it on him just like it's nothing.
But. Oh, yeah. Right. Well, and it's quite possible Yoda did use it to manipulate Luke in a couple. That argument could be made as well.
Yeah, that is true. That could definitely be made to, yeah, did Luke go off and to help them on his own? Or did
he I go don't know. It? Yeah. A lot of questions.
Oh, boy. Now you got me thinking. But 3PO does mention that, you know, it's great to see that Luke learned to use the Force rather well, as he has. So even C-3PO's seen his skills improve. So who knows?
I think that some of that's just the writer making it perfectly clear to the 10-year-old kids reading it that Luke just used the Force, other than just the two fingers.
True.
That may have been just a storytelling technique.
Let's see. I like that big splash page as well of the Tarkin.
Yeah.
Very menacing looking ship. It's kind of like a nub of a Star Destroyer, right? You got the back end of the Star Destroyer, but then all front, it's all business.
Yeah.
Right?
So it's the mullet of Star Destroyers. But yeah, you're right. It's got the bridge, you know, section is the best as you can describe it. But then you see a Star Destroyer for scale on the left-hand side. Mm-hmm. And a Star Destroyer is like this dinky little thing compared to the size and shape of the Tarkin. I also really like the choice in coloring. They used a lot of like bright white and pale yellow to imply that like there's a really harsh sunlight on it, maybe.
Yeah.
It just adds, I don't know, it adds something threatening to it, I think.
It does. I mean, it's just looming there, taking up. This is a full splash page, and I think it's taking up 80% of this page.
Absolutely. And you can't even see all of it. You can't see the back part of it.
No. And again, inky nightmare if you're an inker to do all that. Even all the little stuff that's there, your little circuitry, I don't have a steady hand enough to do that.
Oh, no. I think Grand Moff Tarkin would be proud of this giant weapon of destruction named after him, though.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, yeah, I like that. Then let's go ahead and go talk about the memories of this.
Mm-hmm.
The callbacks as they shuttle towards it. The callbacks for Leia and Luke, just the memories that they have of seeing a massive device unit like that, that they're going back to, especially what had happened to them on the Death Star, along with Chewie and the droids. I don't know if the droids would have too much conflict with it, but maybe a little bit, but definitely more from Leia and Luke, you could see that they're worried.
And I think Simonson and Palmer did a really good job with the art. Like Leia, she looks horrified because she's remembering Alderaan. Luke looks angry, really, because he's remembering the death of Obi-Wan. Chewie's just excited about getting into a fight. You know, he's genuinely excited. And 3PO's got his hand raised. I mean, that's the best they can do with emotion is to make him look nervous. Because, I mean, 3PO and R2 were probably pretty nervous in that control center in the Death Star. So, yeah, I think the art really supports the dialogue there that you're talking about. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then we see Vader sets a plan in motion for as he senses Luke being there. And I was kind of wondering that. I'm like, is he going to know Luke's there? What's going to happen? And then we find out that it's all just a trap, that he's letting them kind of make it feel like nonchalantly that they can get to where they need to go. And so I guess at this time, Luke probably can't sense that he's there. Maybe he can. Maybe we'll find out more in the next episode or the next issue.
I think at this point he definitely does, because he says like no one will suspect a thing. So Luke at this point is clueless. Now he'll sense it later. But this is a bit of another flash forward though, because here Vader is aware that Luke is there on his base and he's letting it happen. And then in return, Vader senses when the Endor shuttle is going down to Endor and he knows Luke's is on it. And he's like, let it pass. It's fine. So it's almost again, Michelini echoes forward.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good catch. Definitely. Yep. Back to Jedi. And then we find out the trap that the officers are now setting to take out Vader. It's like, good for you guys if you succeed, you don't. But I'd be, No one likes a boss like that.
Right. Who wants that? Exactly. It totally makes sense. I was surprised that this captain would be the traitor. I thought that was pretty impressive. And he's working with all these other guys. It is a little weird when they're all shouting, Darth Vader must die. They're all holding hands. I maybe that's just a way to show commitment. I'm not really sure. So,
could be. Yeah.
But here's an interesting thing. I did some research last night. I started wondering, is this the first story where Imperial officers conspire against Darth Vader? Because that type of story gets told pretty frequently. Like the Imperial officers conspire against Vader. Again, not to help the rebels, but to help, they're so, you know, committed to the Empire. They think the Empire would do better without Vader. Yeah. So I did a little research on it, and it's interesting. So it appears, and I may be wrong here, but it appears the very first Star Wars story where Imperial officers, you know, conspire against Vader is actually in the newspaper strip. So I'm glad you mentioned the newspaper. Yeah, exactly. I'm glad you mentioned the newspaper strips earlier. So in a story that later is called Darth Vader Strikes, and that story involves an Imperial officer's secretly sympathetic to the rebels. He arranges for Luke to meet a group of treasonous Imperial saboteurs. Mm-hmm. And these Imperial saboteurs. These Imperials, they are plotting against Vader because of his abuse of Imperial officers. And they're attempting to sabotage his new Star Destroyer, the Executor Project.
Mm.
So here's the interesting thing. This comic strip ran from April through July 1981. This issue was on the shelves that same time, June and July 1981. So these two stories are running exactly concurrently. And the newspaper strip was written by Archie Goodwin with art by Al Williamson, who were the creative team on the previous issue of the Star Wars comic book. And the coincidences are both stories are about conspiracy of Imperial officers plotting against Vader, right? Because of his abuse of the Imperial officers. Both stories revolve around sabotaging during the construction of a new Imperial superweapon. The comic strip, again, same creative team from the last issue of Star Wars, basically both being published at exactly the same time. So it's crazy. Wow. I don't know if someone else has drawn this correlation before, but like, it's almost like there was something in the water. Or you would think Lucasfilm would have been like, guys, you're telling the same story.
Yeah, interesting. Like, or did editorial know what was happening and just let it go that way? That'd be interesting to see. Is like, were there obviously were two different teams working on it?
Yep,
working on the newspaper side and the normal comic side. Plus, you had you have the UK version going on too.
Yep.
So other stories out there as well too.
And I'm sure the lead time, and I don't know which would need more, but I'm sure the lead time on newspaper comic strips and comic books have different lead times. So it may be that these proposals were submitted 6 months apart, and not realizing they'd be published at the same time. I don't know. But I just found that sort of interesting. In fact, last night I busted out my Dark Horse trade of the comic strips and flipped through it. It's a very different story, but it's just interesting. There are the parallels there.
Mm-hmm. How many pages in it
crossed like 3 months, so it was a good the volume one of the trade of the classic Star Wars. I mean, it's, you know, I don't know, a couple hundred pages. So the story, I don't know, I'm totally guessing here.
Yeah.
Let's just say it was 40 pages, I don't know, something like that. So it was a good number of strips. Yeah. So
very interesting.
You know, there's a lot of other stuff going on at the same time. There's a lot of other plots woven into it, but either way, crazy parallels.
Yes.
So overall, I mean, I think it's fair to say this is a pretty great issue. What do you think?
I think it's a great issue. Definitely. I like that we have the beginning three little vignettes that take you halfway through it very quickly, though, gets you into the action. And then everybody gets together to figure out what the major threat is. And then we start to see the plan in motion. But really, there's like three plans in motion here, isn't there? We have the rebels trying to take it down. We got Vader trying to capture some rebels and, you know, definitely trying to capture Luke. And then you got the officers, you know, trying to possibly take down Vader. Lots of threads going on.
Michelinie really threw a lot at the wall with this issue. A lot of subplot building. You know, there's the subplots with Leia frustrated with Han. I'm sorry, with Lando. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot there that he threw in here. And I think it's great. I think it's really an excellent issue. It's definitely a setup. I mean, it's a little hard to read it in itself because you want to know how it ends.
Yeah, I do. I want to know what the next issue is going to be.
So we'll find that out next time we cover an issue. But I think it's a very well put together first issue. So I think Michelinie And Simonson and Palmer off to a great start.
Mm-hmm. Good storytelling in this one.
Yep. Well, real quickly, a couple of segments I'd like to cover here. One is called Playing with the New Toys, specifically the post-Empire toys. This is where anything that's been introduced in Empire Strikes Back is used in the story. In previous episodes, this was not a long segment. It was like, yep, they used this. Okay, there we go. Or they used one or two things. Mm. Man, Michelini has demonstrated right out of the gate that he is invested in the Star Wars lore, and he is going to make this feel like it's part of the Star Wars saga and make it feel like it takes place right after Empire. I'm just going to real quickly just rattle these off, but all of this comes from Empire that they've embedded in here. We got the AT-ST right on the cover, right? You've got the Nebulon B escort frigate right there on the page one. You got General Riken. You've got them searching for a new base after the destruction of Hoth. You've got Gundarks. You've got the AT-AT and the AT-ST. Lando and Chewie searching for Han. The Executor ship or Executor. I don't remember which name it is. I always call it Executor. Maybe it's Executor.
That's what I thought too. But
You got Vader strangling his underlings. You've got, or killing them, I should say. Vader's obsession with Luke and Leia still being mad at Lando. So, I mean, all of these things, that's a lot of Empire stuff he dragged in here. And I feel like it's the first writer who's really taken full advantage of the sandbox from Empire. And I think it's fantastic.
I agree, definitely. I think maybe at this time, the movie's been out, a lot of everything else has been out, that you can now start to take that universe that was even built more and start to, like you said, take those toys out and start playing with them a little bit.
It's just sort of surprising. It's a year now after Empire came out. It's taken them a whole year to finally ramp up to where they need to be, I think, with telling the next, you know, version, next stories for. That's okay. Then I like to look at the letters page. I like to look forward in the future. So I pull out this time I pulled out issue number 57, which is covering letters about this particular issue, just to see if there's any interesting, you know, contemporary commentary from 1981. Mainly just lots of praise for Michelini's first issue. Many saying it's the best issue yet. The letters page editor references Michelini's previous work on Iron Man and Avengers. I guess I didn't know he wrote Avengers. So
I didn't know that either.
Yeah. So I want to check those out now. They praise the subplot building and the fact that the story's covering more than one issue, stuff we talked about. Now, they do say here, quote, one person writes, the Simonson-Palmer team is still the best penciler-inker combo to ever grace these pages. And I'm not going to argue with that statement. They also praise the coloring. Although Fred Rausch and Scott Allen, famously from No Address Given, they are not happy, folks, let me tell you. They wrote, quote, Princess Leia's ship looks like a cross between a swamp turtle and a homesick beetle. Not impressed at all. Please try to fix in the future. Oof, man. Oof. Fred and Scott, they are not cutting them any slack, are they?
Harsh.
But you called out the ship.
Yeah, I it's different. Yep. I like that they called it like a beetle looking, and now I can see.
Yes, I can too.
That it was a little look like that. But you know, you take what you get. The rebels, you know, they don't get all the nice new stuff.
Well, Leia's ship does look kind of cute, and I did wonder after reading that comment, like, did they draw it kind of cute on purpose because she's the girl character? I wonder. Well, you know,
yeah.
I don't know. But either way, Pat, I got a question for you. So, is this a Star Wars story? Like, you know, some months it's going to be a different kind of genre that gets adapted, basically. So what do you think? Is this one a true Star Wars story?
Well, Shag, I'm glad you asked. I'm going to say, yes, it is a true Star Wars story, but more in a Star Wars side quest. And you being the role-playing guy, you kind of can understand that, where this is a little quest off the side, you know, as we see, because they actually pull them from the main quest that's happening overall of, you know, searching for the rebel base, new location again, and then also, you know, the search for Han. So it's a nice side quest. You get the band back together. They're going to go storm this little castle here and try to get some, I guess the treasure would be just taking it down. And then come back, and then they'll be able to start all up again, because, you know, they won't have this big bad that could take them out and don't even need to worry about a planet. But Shag, what do you think? Is this...
I absolutely do think it's a Star Wars story, but I love your version of calling it a side quest. That's fantastic. Because, I mean, really, that's what these 3 years are. Because,
yeah.
I mean, Marvel knows they cannot advance the story. They can't find Han. They can't resolve Jabba. Marvel is told specifically you cannot have Vader and Luke meet in any of your stories. So they have no choice but to do 3 years of side quests. And that's a good way to describe this. It does feel very Star Wars for me. Again, because Michelini played with so many of the toys. Mm-hmm. It does feel very Star Wars. In fact, it feels like we're really deeply embedded in the Star Wars universe, but maybe, well, I don't know, the Tarkin's a pretty big threat. I was going to say maybe tackling things that aren't as big, but Tarkin's a huge threat. So yeah, it's definitely a Star Wars story. I would agree. All right, well, now we are going to award the coveted
the Golden Pliff Award.
This is where we nominate our favorite moment from the issue, whether it's a story beat, something in the art, some aspect of Star Wars lore we find exciting, whatever it might be. Both myself and Pat are going to pick one moment each to spotlight, and those moments will each earn a Golden Pliff Award. Now, if for some reason you are some of the poor, sad, uninformed folks that are not aware of who Pliff is, this award is given out for the single greatest Star Wars character of all time, Pliff the Hujib. So you will learn more about him in future. You'll learn more about him in future episodes. Now, Pat, you are the guest, so could you please tell me your nomination for the Golden Pliff Award?
Oh, man. Well, I'm so glad that you chose the Pliff. Pliff's a great character. There's one of the comics that I did get from Iraq had Pliff in it, and yay! Always a neat little character in that. Mm-hmm. I like that. So thanks for doing that, Shag. But for mine, there's a few things to choose from. I'm going to choose the segment with Luke on that planet. Mm. I think I just like the action that's going on there. As I mentioned it before, as a kid, if I read this, I'd be wanting to go outside and start playing that and recreating that. Those action scenes that were going on. If only I could have all those toys. Yeah.
I could totally see, wanting to play with. Yeah. I didn't have any of the AT-ATs or AT-STs I could totally see wanting to recreate that with the toys. Yeah. That's a great one. Good point. Mm-hmm. Playing in the mud too with your action figures.
Yeah. What did you choose, Chick?
For me, I picked that last panel with the Imperials all chanting Darth Vader must die. It was such a shocking moment when I was a kid. Just even the idea like Darth Vader is so cool. Why would anyone want to stop him? That kind of thing. And just, it's a great, if you don't know it's coming, it really comes out of left field. You don't see it coming. And you're like, whoa, a conspiracy against Vader. So I think that for me personally is worthy of it. I considered the reveal of the Tarkin, which is a great visual spot.
That's another one too. Yeah.
But from a plot point of view, I just felt like Darth Vader must die was the one. So congratulations to both of these moments, Luke playing in the mud and a bunch of Imperial officers holding hands. You have both won the coveted Golden Pliff Award. Please display it in a place of pride, maybe on a mantle over your fireplace, something like that. So put it in a nice place, folks. Now, Pat, I need to ask a favor. Would you mind hanging out here for a bit for a little while and keep an eye on the podcast? I want to make sure that the other members of the Fire and Water Podcast Network don't get together, hold hands, and chant, "The irredeemable Shag must die."
Sure, I can definitely do that. I will actually, Shag, what I'll do is I'll sneak up down to where they're holding their group together, and I'll go in and sneak in and see what I can find out what's going on.
Excellent.
And maybe see if there's some Christmas lights as well, too. Maybe they'll help me do some Christmas lights at the Long Box Crusade Network.
Perfect. There you go. Well, I appreciate that, Pat. Don't worry, we will bring you back at the end of the show. But after this podcast promo break, I'm going to read your listener feedback in a segment called Star Words.
All right, our bags are packed and we got the snacks. It's time for the Long Box Crusade road trip to the Long Box Mobile, crew.
Check on.
Dang it.
Everyone buckled up. Here we go.
Well, now that the garage is empty, Gene will have more space to record episodes of LBC Irregulars, the indexing of the Jeremy Brett Sherlock Holmes TV series.
Oh, no. Did anyone remember to leave Clinton some food down in the basement? He's going to need it as he makes more episodes of Fan Film Fridays. His ongoing look at online fan films.
Why are you speaking in such a scripted manner, Dark Web? Anyway, you can relax. I asked Rick, or was it Jeff? Who can remember? I asked the attic guy to come down from time to time to check in on Clinton. Take some breaks from recording Monday Movie Muckabout, his movie review show.
Weasel Skull, did you give Rick the key to the basement?
Key.
Sounds like LBC headquarters is in good hands, Death Probe.
Right you are, Christados. Oh, Pat, can we stop off at KB Toy Store? I'm going to pick up some Transformers and G.I. Joes. They remind me of Transformers Chronicles and G.I. Joe Chronicles. Our show's going through the Marvel run of Transformers comics and the Devil's Due run of Joe comics.
Well, while you guys are doing that, we can also stop by a Blockbuster Video and get some tapes to watch for Action Film Face Off. That's the show where we discuss two action films and have them duke it out to see which one is the episode champion.
Is that VHS or Beta?
Either one's fine.
We've got a lot of stops to make, but if we can, let's squeeze in the Walden books and score some comics for us to talk about on Crusader Chronicles, the show where we move chronologically through the Amazing Spider-Man comics and include a bonus issue from the same release date as the Spidey recovery.
I will definitely keep an eye out for our Walden books. It'll come in handy for the pure Long Box Crusade episodes, our time capsule show where we take a deep dive into a randomly selected comic and talk about news, music, and movies and ads that were popular when the books were released. I'll also be on the lookout for our electronic boutique. EB, if you guys don't know the lingo back then, so we can get some more comic-related video games for us to discuss on Comics to Council Crusade.
Good thinking. If time permits, let's hit Circuit City. I need more positrons for our pop culture Positcast show, the one where we find all the good stuff in pop culture that others seem to poo-poo.
Positrons?
Shut up and go with it.
These old-timey, out-of-business store jokes doing anything for you folks? Well, if you like old-timey stuff, we also offer Saturday Matinee Theater, our look back at old TV shows, serials, and films that have kind of been forgotten.
I think that about covers it. We definitely want to be your road trip crew, folks.
Whether it's your commute to work or a road trip of your own, why not pass the time with us, your friends at the Long Box Crusade?
Once again, that's Long Box Crusade, available on all your finer podcatchers.
Good job, team. I'm getting hungry. Pat, stop at the next Kenny Rogers Roasters that you see.
Or Pennigan's.
Burger Chef!
Star Words.
Star Words is the segment of the show where we cover your feedback from the previous episode and is named for the letter column in these classic Marvel Star Wars comics. Now, over on social media, I have posted a lot of the things we talked about in this episode, so be sure to check out Empire to Jedi on social media from the past week. Now, one of the things I forgot to mention during the recording, but I'm happy I can mention here, is I actually own a copy of this comic, Star Wars number 51, as printed in Danish. And this was a gift from Diablo Frank when he went on a world tour. So it's actually collected of issues 51 and 52. And since it's got 52 as well, I suppose we can talk about that part of it again next episode. But in it includes, obviously, the reprints of the two comics in that language, but also has a text piece about lasers and a homemade experiment you can perform with a magnifying glass and a sun to sort of simulate a laser. Then it has another very short text piece that's like a half riddle, half joke about Lando swindling someone. And then the coolest page is where you can cut out different sections of the comic and fold them together to form basically a paper airplane version of an X-Wing fighter. That is so stinking cool. I'll be sure to put a couple pictures of that out on social media as well. And no, I do not read Danish, but I can use Google Translate with the camera feature. So something else I thought I'd share is, you know, the Fire and Water Podcast Network has a Patreon. And over on there, I recently launched a poll of our Patreon members asking them, how do you engage with Star Wars outside of the movies? Meaning, again, besides the movies, what media format brings you the most joy? And looking at the results as of at least at the time of this recording, currently in the lead are the television projects, which is like live action, animated, no real surprise there. But in second place, right behind them, coming right up on the heels of the television projects, people voted for the comic books and the newspaper strips. So great job representing you people. And in reviewing the results in the comments, I definitely recognize a whole bunch of you from the Empire to Jedi listeners voting in that poll. So thank you. Then for the rest of the poll in descending order, next was the novels, then the toys, then the video games, and finally, sadly, coming in last is my beloved role-playing and tabletop games. That's okay. But you could participate in polls like this for just as little as $1 a month by supporting the Fire and Water Podcast Network on Patreon. So thank you to everyone who voted. All right, now, just a reminder, you can find us as Empire to Jedi on most social media platforms, and as I always say, it's about building a community of online Star Wars fans around the show. Now, I do have a favor to ask. If you haven't left us a review on iTunes or Apple Podcasts yet, please consider it. It really helps raise the profile of the show and attract new listeners. All you got to do is look on Apple Podcasts or iTunes for Marvel Star Wars from Empire to Jedi, or you could just type Empire to Jedi. It'll probably come up that way, too. But as a thank you, I will read your entire review on the air. Just like this person, Brett Corey, who left this comment on, again, on iTunes. He also left it on our website. But he writes, "A Marvel Comics Star Wars podcast? Talk about chocolate and my peanut butter." Picture this. It's a hot August day in the early 1990s. Summer break is winding down, and my small Midwest town is holding its annual flea market. Me, being a Star Wars-loving kid who's just fallen hard for Marvel Comics, thanks to their trading cards, just stumbled across a copy of Star Wars number 50 in a moldering old long box that this even older, moldier dude was selling. I had to have it, and I reread that thing 100 times. Cut to just a few weeks ago, I stumble across a repost about a podcast with a picture of that unmistakable, unforgettable cover to Star Wars number 50. You got me. I'm all in and listening from the beginning. Great show, loving it, keep up the great work. Now to dig through my collection downstairs to find that comic, I'm overdue for a reread. Oh, well, thank you, Brent Corey. I really appreciate that. And welcome to our Star Wars family. Again, folks, you can look on iTunes or Apple Podcasts for Marvel Star Wars from Empire to Jedi. All right, now we're going to move on to your comments. So these are coming from the Fire and Water Podcast Network website or any emails that we received. Remember, that's the way to get your comments read on the show. I put all these in a Google document. Now, I can't read every word. There is a ton of feedback. So what I'm going to do is acknowledge every single person that left a comment on our website and read a portion of their comments. Now, we are covering our last episode on Star Wars number 50. The Crimson Forever with my guest Devin Clancy. So he is in fact the first person to leave a comment. He says, a one tangent I left out in my origin story was the reason I only had the droid action figures in 1980. My dad was staunchly anti-gun and had declared that I shouldn't have toy guns. I'm sure he was thinking of me running around with realistic looking full-size guns. He was genuinely confounded by toy guns that were less than an inch long. That rule bent rather quickly as soon as I suffered the peer pressure of not having enough Star Wars figures. Oh, that's awesome, Devin. Thank you so much for sharing. Now, also, I just want to mention, last episode, there was a bit of a discussion about whether I should cover the Star Wars radio dramas here on the show, meaning, you know, Star Wars Empire and Return. And about half the comments on the last episode did support me in covering the radio drama. There were no votes opposed. I'm still thinking about it. So if you want to speak up, be sure to leave a comment on our website. All right, up next is Mark Baker Wright from Black Rock's Toy Box and Not Your Father's Autobot podcast. Mark says, my two cents, I'd say go for it with covering the NPR radio dramas. I'd even say do Return of the Jedi. But hearing Shag's comments suggest that it might move too far away from Find Your Joy, so I wouldn't push that too hard. Well, Mark, I mean, honestly, I could be up for all of it or none of it. I don't know. I'm really trying to think it through. Star Wars, obviously, is the one most people remember. For me personally, Empire is my favorite. You know, the tenet of the show is Empire to Jedi, so to cover the Empire radio show and maybe the Return radio show makes the most sense. I don't know. Again, share your thoughts on the website, folks, and I'm noodling on it, and maybe it'll happen. All right, then we hear from Jeff R., who says, you know who else lost an arm and got a nearly undetectable replacement? Dr. Eben Zan is probably just as capable of getting a cybernetic arm as Luke. Oh, yeah, that's right, because we saw him in issue 50 and he had two arms. Good point. Fair enough. Then he says, that cover for some reason has Mad Magazine vibes. He says it complimentary, though, like a cover before adding gags. But I don't think there's any creative overlap here. You know, Jeff, I can kind of see what you mean with the painterly sort of style of the cover. Mad did do a lot of that painterly kind of stuff, so that's fair. Then we have Andrew Leyland from Hey Kids Comics in the Overlooked Dark Knight and more. He says you should totally do the radio shows because they're great. And even goes so far as to say when you get to the end, you should stretch it slightly to cover Jawas of Doom because I know someone perfect to cover that issue. Should we both still be alive when you get there? Oh, Andy. So yeah, fair enough. It's going to take me several years to get through all of this, right? And then, yeah, as I just said a second ago, the tenet of the show is Empire to Return, and Jawas of Doom is literally the very first piece of original fiction about Star Wars that takes place after Return of the Jedi. So I'll tell you what, in the back of my head, I do kind of have a plan that when I get there in, I don't know, 7 years or whatever it's going to be, of how I could continue the show. So that's a maybe, buddy. All right, let's put a pin in it. Then I heard from movie Matt Sorois from the TV Movie Rewind podcast. Now, just so you remember, Matt is a massive, massive Han Solo fan, and he will brook no discussion other than about Han Solo. So Matt writes, you undersold the cover of this masterpiece of comic art. I remember seeing that absolutely amazing cover in the spinner rack at the Walden Books. I was with my dad and younger brother when there it was, right out in front as I turned the rack looking for which comics I was going to buy, and I kept spinning right past it. My dad asked incredulously, you don't want Star Wars? I replied with a smug derision, nah, it's not as good without Han Solo in it. He pointed towards the image of Han Solo in the background and said, well, who's that? What? How? He's frozen! Captured! I flipped through the book to make sure it wasn't a hoax, an imaginary story, or an outright lie. It wasn't. There he was with his faithful Wookiee companion Chewbacca. Star Wars number 50 went into the group of comic purchases, and later when I got home, I started to read them. I grabbed Star Wars first and skipped right to the Han Solo flashback tale. It was probably a few years before I actually read the rest of the comic. Star Wars number 50 is not only the pinnacle of the original Marvel run, it is a standout of all the Star Wars comics published. The creative team figured out how to celebrate the 50 issue milestone, including all the main characters, and make it work within the continuity of the films. When I sold off my Marvel Star Wars collection in the late 1990s, I kept issues 50, 70, and a few other Han Solo-centric issues. Over the years, I sold off those as well, except for issue 50, which remains in my collection to this day. It's one of my favorite books and is in a binder with several other comics of sentimental value that can be grabbed should I ever have to evacuate in case of an emergency. Oh, wow, Matt, that's awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing. John Dredge wrote in to say, is there an image gallery for this episode? Well, sorry, John. We don't do galleries for Marvel Star Wars. These are some of the most reprinted comics in all of history, so they're very commonly available. And really, I don't want to risk the wrath of Lucasfilm and Disney. And it is honestly, image galleries are a bit of a pain as well. But if you check Empire to Jedi on social media, I've been posting many of the images we discuss. So there you go. That's your key to finding the stuff from these episodes. Then I heard from Rom Kelly from the Firewater Podcast Network. He does shows such as Fade Out, Mashcast, and he's been my long-term podcasting partner. Rob says, the Star Wars series, always pretty good in my opinion, was really on a roll here. Just one really fun adventure after the next. Yeah, Rob. I mean, this Michelini, Simonson, Palmer run is unbelievable. So yeah, so excited for these. Then I heard from Mike Jameson from the Pop Culture Basement Podcast and the Sleazebag Cinema Podcast. Mike says, covering the radio drama sounds like fun, a unique idea. If you do undertake this quest, check out the new book by Maria Jose and John Tenuto, The Star Wars Radio Dramas, Brian Daly, and the Serialization That Saved NPR. Wow, Mike. Thanks for the tip. I appreciate that, buddy. Then we heard from David Ace Gutierrez, owner and operator of Hammerhead Hamburgers. He says, yes, cover those radio dramas. I heard you like things like Big Finish, so this bodes well. Big Finish is a company that does a lot of Doctor Who audio dramas, which I buy a lot of, as David well knows. Then Bucky749, the American Samurai, has his own YouTube channel. Says, yes, you should cover the radio shows. You could do a format where you play the episode and talk about it with a guest at the beginning and the end. You could call it Theater from a Galaxy Far, Far Away. Just an idea. Well, thank you, Bucky. I appreciate that. Now, to be fair, if I do cover the radio dramas, I will not be playing the actual radio drama episode because that's copyrighted material. It's still out there for the public to consume, and that's just going to get a lot of crackdown on me for copyright infringement. All right, then we hear from Comic Foil. It says, that's interesting. The Millennium Falcon's gun turrets didn't get used in Empire Strikes Back or Return of the Jedi. That never crossed my mind, but explains why it was such a thrill to see Finn use them in The Force Awakens. And even better, in The Rise of Skywalker, when actor Dennis Lawson returned to play Wedge one last time, and they filmed him manning those same quad guns. I'm the same way. That scene in The Rise of Skywalker, when you see Wedge and Tilly shooting that gun, oh my gosh, it makes me so happy to see that scene. Then Comic Foil goes on to say, thrilled to hear you both are fans of the X-Wing series of novels. I rank those books just as highly as Timothy Zahn's contribution to the galaxy far, far away. Zahn, Stackpole, and Alston were tops in my book at writing Star Wars. Always thrilled to find another Star Wars novel fan. Yeah, I love those books. Then he says, I reread the issue after listening to your podcast, and I found it interesting that you mentioned Simonson only inked his own pencils on the last page, but that top right panel with a close-up of Leia is about the prettiest we have ever seen the princess in this Marvel series. You're right, Comic Foil. In fact, he shared it on social media, that particular panel as well. You're exactly right. That panel of Leia is stunning. Then we're from Ryan Daly from the Firewater Podcast Network. He has shows such as Batman Nightcast and Cheerscast, and you can find him on Instagram as Deadboth and Spy, displaying his custom Star Wars action figures. Oh yeah, and I'm legally obligated to mention he was also the host of a podcast currently on an extended hiatus called Give Me Those Star Wars on the Fire and Water Podcast Network, and he'll never let me forget it. All right, so Ryan writes, great episode as always. Devin was a terrific guest. Seriously? I did all of that introduction for Ryan, and that's all he said? Okay, moving on. They were from John Stibe, who says, what I appreciate most about this episode is Shag's absolute love for this comic. We all have issues that were on our firsts or have some special place in our hearts, and I've heard Shag talk about this one before, but it was even better for him to have an entire episode to devote to why he has such a passion for it. I will repeat, I still never really got into the Marvel Star Wars comics, but darn, this episode does a great job of getting me to reconsider that decision. Thanks again for all the shared joy. Oh, I appreciate it, John, and it's so kind of you to listen, even though you haven't read these comics. I hope it does inspire you. Take a read of some of these someday. Then we heard from Jason R. Lady, author of the young adult humorous fantasy adventure novels Monster Problems, Super Problems, Time Problems, and The Pure Shore Club. Jason writes, since I came in on the later Michelini stuff and the Duffy run, I only purchased issue 50 as part of the epic back issue hunt my dad and I embarked on to get the whole set. Domina Tagg was an interesting villain, and I wish they'd brought her back during this series. I really, really like the Han Solo portion of the story, and it's a feel of one of those Brian Daley novels. Great outer space adventure where amazing and often bonker stuff happens. The framing story is good too, but I enjoy the Han and Chewie story more. And agreed on the wonderful cover and a story worthy of the 50th issue of the series. Awesome. Well, thank you, Jason. Then James Williams says, here's what I don't understand about the Marvel Star Wars comic. I heard multiple times that Star Wars was the comic book that saved Marvel during some very tough times. If that's the case, why did it take them 50 issues before they brought their A game? Wow, that's a burn. Then James goes on to say, I remember trying Marvel Star Wars a few times and being really disappointed. The stories were okay, and I really didn't like Carmine's artwork. But I could only afford 3 or 4 comics a month, so Star Wars didn't make the cut. I'll never understand why they didn't hand this book over to a team like Jerry Conway and John Buscema. That I would have bought. Oh, James, wow. You've probably just upset a lot of the classic Star Wars fans who read the series before Empire Strikes Back. But for me personally, I'm right there with you, man. You know, I read a couple of issues before Empire, and they were fun, and there's some good adventure to it, and you know, but they weren't really for me. But there is no denying that the sales on those early Star Wars comics quite literally saved Marvel Comics. So, I mean, whether you and I love those early comics is one issue, and the separate issue is, yeah, it really did save Marvel Comics with the sales numbers, and can't deny that. So, and James finishes up by saying, thanks for another amazing episode. Loving this podcast. Well, thank you, James. I appreciate it. Now, folks, it is time to say thank you to everyone who shared this show on their social media timeline. That's Facebook, Blue Sky, X or Twitter, Instagram, and Threads. I know this is a long list of names. However, these folks showed their support and helped promote the show. So it's really important to me that we recognize these individuals. Because, you know what? I'll give you an example. Like, I'm going to pick a name out here at random. J. David Weider. You know, this is the only time we're going to mention him. But he is part of our family. And it's important that I recognize that he went out there and shared our show. Now, this time out, we've got over 50 names of people who helped promote the show recently. And quite frankly, it's probably more because Facebook and Instagram have changed some of their algorithms and I can't see who's resharing over there very cleanly. I have to collect the information just for my notifications and that can be pretty hit or miss. So I did my best. Now, you could be on this list next episode. It's really easy. All you got to do is share or retweet or reskeet, I don't know, whatever it's called, on Facebook, Blue Sky, X or Twitter, Instagram, or Threads. So our thanks go out to Al the Comics Guy, Alan Boyce Jr., Andy Kapelish, Archie Goodwin Tribute, Bag Hutch, Benjamin Hall, Between the Pages Blog, Billy D and his Magazines and Monsters account, Billy Hines, Comic Enabler and Victim, Black Dragon Games, Black Vulcan 69, Cat Randall, Chris Franklin, Clinton Robison, Comic Foil, Corellian Pirate, D. Kennedy at Detective 38, Dan Dougherty, Devin Clancy, Diablo Frank, Isolated Tops, J. David Weider, Jim at Daredevil 1972, John Stibe, Jordan Jennings, Keechy Baker, Lizanne Oswalt, Mark Baker Wright, Martha Spars, Matt Saroyce, May Angels and Heroes, Mike Thomas, Mike Jameson and his accounts for This Lightsaber Kills Fascists and Pop Culture Basement Podcast, Normal Gamer, Paul Kien, Rob Kelly, Ryan Daly and his Batman Nightcast account, Sarah Century, Scott X, The Star Wars Splash Page Podcast, Stephen or Else, Stephen E. Shend, Tim Price and his Outcasters Under Siege, an Avengers podcast, Vanilla Fingers, Venkman, Wendell Thornhill, and Zek Cap Boots. Whew, folks, thank you so much for your support of the Empire to Jedi podcast. I truly believe that listener feedback, seriously, it is a critical part of the show, and this community of Star Wars fans we're building together are the best. So if I've forgotten or missed anyone, I am terribly sorry. It is probably the fault of Devin Clancy. You know, I do my best to find all the social media comments, but sometimes they do slip through my internet fingers. So if I missed you, just let me know. So please keep those cards and letters coming. And go to our website. Again, if you want to have your comments right on the show, this is the way to do it. Go to fireandwaterpodcast.com/EmpireToJedi. Leave your comments on the show post, and your fellow Star Wars fans can share your thoughts with you and communicate together and get right on the show. As I said before, you can find us on social media as Empire to Jedi, or you can email us at EmpireToJedi@gmail.com. My thanks again to you listeners for such a great collection of feedback. Now we're going to take a quick podcast promo break, and when we come back, we'll see how this episode's guest, Pat Sampson, handled keeping my fellow podcast network traitorous murderers at bay.
Return to the House of Frankenstein and enter its horror hall of fame.
4 fright-filled films featuring the legends of terror.
Vincent Price.
I'm going to give the people what they want. Sensation, horror, shock.
Lon Chaney Jr.
I brought that wonderful surprise I promised you.
Peter Cushing.
I know that strange, devilish forces do exist with powers beyond the comprehension of mere mortal man.
Christopher Lee.
Burn, witch, burn, witch, burn, burn, burn.
Plus your favorite superheroes battle macabre menaces.
The Fantastic Four.
The Phantom Stranger.
The Teen Titans.
And Superman.
Tell me where they are and I'll break every bone in your body.
Visit fireandwaterpodcast.com in September and October as the Supermates podcast returns for its terrifying 13th season at the House of Frankenstein.
There's something wrong with us. Something very, very wrong with us. Something seriously wrong with us.
He's a comedy legend, a cultural icon, an enigmatic figure who courts both adulation and controversy. So what is it? What about Bill?
I'm a god.
You're a god.
I'm a god. I'm not the god. I don't think.
What About Bill, a new show exploring the movies, exploits, and myth of Bill Murray. Join Mike Jamison and a variety of guests as we celebrate the work of one of the greatest comedy enigmas ever. Coming soon to the Pop Culture Basement Podcast Network. Available on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, Amazon, and all reputable podcast platforms. Look for us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and Blue Sky.
Well, in the words of Jean-Paul Sartre, au revoir, Gaufre.
Okay, folks, we're back for break, and yes, we have got Pat back with us. Now, Pat, thank you so much for appearing on this episode. This has been an absolute blast. I love chatting with you. We don't do it often enough, and we've also got so much overlapping love for Star Wars EU that this has been so much fun. You always bring a wonderful energy to the table, so thank you so much. Why don't you tell the people at home where they can find more of you, sir?
Well, thank you, Shag. I appreciate you having me on. It's been great to be here to talk Star Wars with you. Like we said in the beginning, it was 2016 when I started. It took that long to get on your Star Wars show. Ryan had me on like a little bit after I started when I was on Give Me Those Star Wars. We actually talked about the Death Star. So if you go way back in that feed, you'll hear me talking about the Death Star with Ryan on that. I had a good time as well. But appreciate you, Shag, helping me get started in the podcasting career. It's just been a great time. And love the community that you guys have built and the podcast community that we're all a part of. So with that, speaking about podcasting, you can find the Longbox Crusade out on all the good fine podcatchers out there. Just go ahead and look us up at Longbox Crusade. We're there. All the socials, you'll find us. Three times a week, we're putting out different stuff, anywhere from recovering Amazing Spider-Man and another comic in from that era. We have Transformers, G.I. Joe, action films, so much more. Sherlock Holmes. We cover old-time movies. Just so much that is on the Longbox Crusade that I'm forgetting it. And a lot of it too is we have, just like you've built up a great network of other podcasting friends that we have on there too that do a great job of their shows. So come check us out when you get a chance. That's at the Longbox Crusade.
It's well worth your time, folks. There's an amazing amount of content over there. Great shows. I mean, the fact is, if you're listening to this, then you like Star Wars and you like 80s comics. Dude, go listen to the Longbox Crusade.
Exactly. For you,
exactly. So definitely check that out. And again, Pat, thank you again for being here. I really can't thank you enough. This has been so much fun.
It has been fun, Shag. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me on.
All right. Well, that is going to do it, folks. Now come back in 2 months for the next episode when we cover Marvel Star Wars number 52. And I'll be joined by a fantastic guest to help me cover the issue. Who will it be? Come on, people. You know how this works. You're just going to have to wait and find out next episode. Thanks for listening, everyone. Until next time, I'm Shag.
And I'm Pat. And may the Force be with you.
Always.